This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Some of the best-known and some of the most notorious radio personalities are switching from regular radio stations to satellite radio. Last week, shock jock Howard Stern announced plans to move his program to Sirius satellite radio. Earlier this month, former Morning Edition host Bob Edwards started a show on the rival satellite system, XM. Both outlets offer a huge variety of music formats as well, and some of you are hearing this program on one of NPR's two channels on Sirius. This all began in 1997 when the FCC cleared the way to beam programs to satellites in Earth orbit, which then relay the signals to special receivers back here on Earth. To hear it, you need to buy one of those special receivers and then pay a monthly subscription fee. Between them, XM and Sirius boast almost 3 million subscribers, and Stern's deal in particular, he's going to get $100 million a year for 5 years, is making traditional radio broadcasters a little nervous about the power of this new medium. Later in the program, political editor Ken Rudin joins us to preview tonight's presidential debate. But first, the future of satellite radio. If you have questions about how it works, what it does, about the regulations, the economics, or the politics of satellite radio, give us a call. If you've listened to it, give us a call and tell us what's good about it and what isn't. The phone number here, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. To get started, we turn to two broadcasters who've already made the switch, Greg Opie Hughes and Anthony Cumia of the show Opie and Anthony, which is now on XM Radio. Mr. Hughes is with us by phone from New York City. Mr. Cumia from his home on Long Island, thanks to you both for being with us, and congratulations for getting back on the air.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
You guys were fired twice in 4 years. Do you think you're going to have better luck at XM?
I would hope so. I would think so, too. I think we have a little more freedom to do with what we do without having to worry about getting the boot.
Now, you guys, being on satellite radio, are freed from the restrictions that you had when broadcasting on regular radio stations, of course, FCC regulations.
Right. We don't have to adhere to the same rules as broadcast radio. It's not regulated by the FCC like traditional broadcast radio. So we can cover a lot of subject matter that we just couldn't cover on traditional broadcast radio.
Mm-hmm. Traditional radio stations, I know since your last departure from the air, but I know that various broadcasters have been courting the two of you to get you back on the air. Why did you decide to go to satellite and not to syndicate with somebody else?
Oh, that's a good question. We felt like with the FCC coming down on indecency and anything that's considered edgy, that if Anthony and I went back to regular radio, we would have a bullseye on our head, and we wouldn't be able to do the show we know that we're capable of doing. And it's a show where it's a couple guys talking how guys talk. So we saw the freedom of going to satellite radio, and it wasn't even a question that this was our next move.
The incident over which I guess you were last fired was a broadcast of your show, which had people having sex in St. Patrick's Cathedral. I guess some people would call that edgy. A lot of people called it offensive.
Yeah, well, we can't argue with the fact that it was offensive. It absolutely was. It offended people, so it's offensive. The truth of the matter is, though, was it indecent? Was the broadcast itself indecent? No, we say no, and Infinity Broadcasting has said no by not paying the fine. They're fighting it. Our show has always been pegged as being out of control, and we have been hosts that have been out of control and not adhered to the rules, but we were a little smarter than that, and we did adhere to FCC regulations as far as the language of that show goes. We were well within FCC guidelines during that show.
Yeah, I mean, morally it was wrong, obviously, and we showed bad judgment, but it was a clean radio show, and Anthony and I have been doing radio together for 10 years, and no company has ever had to pay a fine because of a radio show we've done. So.
Well, since that incident, the FCC seems to be putting out more fines, and there's a possibility the fines are going to get substantially bigger. So all of this is contributing to your decision to go to satellite.
Yeah, I think it's also going to contribute to other people's decisions, especially if the FCC decides to implement the fines against the radio personalities themselves, which is ridiculous. I think if you go in to work on a daily basis at a radio station, and there's this threat over your head that you may have to pay huge fines to the FCC, you're going to do radio that, quite frankly, is boring and safe, no chances, no spontaneity. And that's the direction that traditional radio is going in. I mean, people are just afraid of their jobs and their livelihoods, and I think satellite radio is a great option to people that want to take a few chances, want to be a little edgy, want to have some spontaneity to their programs without that threat looming over their head that they're going to get fired, blackballed in the industry, huge fines levied against them.
Now, before, your fans listened for free. They had to endure the occasional advertisement every once in a while, but now they're going to have to buy one of these special boxes and then pay the monthly fee. Do you think that's going to work?
It's working like crazy. XM is very, very happy with the amount of people that have signed up for the service, and yeah, it's spreading across America already. People are just signing up in droves because they've had, since we've been off the air, 2 years of listening to what's out there on commercial radio, and quite frankly, the type of audience we attract, no one is servicing them out there. So, yeah, this is they know this is their only option, and they're signing up, definitely.
You got to realize also this is the, it's pretty much the infancy of the business of satellite radio. Eventually, you're not going to have to go into the store and buy these units and stuff. They're going to be standard equipment in the cars and just commonplace around your house. I think right now, I think satellite radio is over that hump of is it going to be around? I think it's proven it's going to be around. It's not going anywhere. And I think it's just going to get easier for the people to get the service, much like FM radio was when there was only AM and cable television.
Yeah, XM is predicting 20 million subscribers by the year 2010. So, I mean, this is real, and it's happening today. So they're making more and more deals with the car companies to just have it as standard equipment right off the factory line. So
a lot of people make audience predictions of all kinds. I assume you guys have a satellite radio of your own. What do you listen to? What do you like besides what you guys do?
That's a good question. I listen to a lot of news stations. I listen to world news. I listen to, believe it or not, sometimes NPR. I love blues, so they got a blues station. A lot of really cool rock stations. They got a comedy channel. I'm all over the place.
You can flip on any of the news programs, Fox or CNN, and just the variety that's available to you makes you check out stuff you wouldn't normally have the ability to check out on regular broadcast radio. You know, there's only so many stations on traditional broadcast radio. They're very restricted because the companies that own them know what makes the money. They try to squeeze every buck out of the stations that they can, so they're not willing to really take any chances as far as the music goes. But with satellite, you can really check out stuff that you just wouldn't have the ability to check out on traditional radio.
Well, thanks very much for being with us, and good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Greg Opie Hughes and Anthony Cumia, the hosts of the Opie and Anthony Show, which airs on XM Radio. Opie was with us by phone from his home in New York. Anthony from his home on Long Island. To give us now a better sense of the growing satellite radio industry, we turn to Richard Martin, a contributing editor to Wired magazine. He's been tracking the industry. He's with us by phone from Kailua Kona in Hawaii. Thanks very much for being with us.
You're quite welcome.
The two networks claim that their numbers are continuing to bloom. Why are people turning to satellite radio?
Well, I think Opie and Anthony hit it on the head. The variety and the choice you get with satellite radio, whether it's XM or Sirius, is just there's nothing to compare on terrestrial radio. And it bodes to get worse because as the satellite industry grows, I think terrestrial radio is just going to keep its head in the sand and keep producing more of the same.
Who are these subscribers?
Well, I think if you look back at the history of cable TV, it's kind of similar in the sense that it's people who are looking for something different. It's people who have $10 a month to spend on what has long been considered a free service, and it's people who really want a lot more choice. And I think right now what you've seen to date is mostly music freaks like myself who really signed off, so to speak, of terrestrial radio a long time ago, and who are looking for both the kind of music that I listen to at home as well as new music that I can't hear elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. And why is it that this is not subject to FCC regulation?
Well, again, I mean, if you look at cable TV, the Sopranos can put pretty graphic murders and sex on cable TV because it's a paid service. And the history of broadcasting is that the true broadcast networks and radio stations are considered, in some sense, to have a public service function. And so they are obligated to live under a certain amount of federal regulation. Pay services, pay TV, cable TV, and satellite radio don't have that same function, and so it's pretty much uncharted territory.
If you'd like to join our conversation, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can also email us, TOTN@npr.org. And let's talk with Rick, who joins us on the phone from Durham, North Carolina.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Rick.
Hi. I just want to say satellite radio is great. I live in an area that is predominantly, it has an increased Latino population tremendously since I've been here, but there's only one Latino-oriented radio station, and satellite, specifically XM Radio, provide several Latino-oriented programming that I wouldn't be able to access to normally.
Mm-hmm. And so do you end up listening to that more often than you listen to traditional radio?
Yes, I do. And you can't beat the fact that it's commercial-free. I mean, that's another thing, that a lot of times you get radio and you really like a song and it goes into all these commercials and you just, it gets kind of something that you don't want to listen to. But not with XM. I've had... my cousin just bought a new car, and it had the XM stereo inside of it. We didn't even know what it was, and then we started playing it, and now we're, like, totally addicted to it.
So it came with the car when you bought it?
That is correct.
Yeah. Okay. Rick, thanks very much.
Hey, you're welcome.
Appreciate it. Richard Martin, is all of satellite radio commercial-free?
The music channels are commercial-free. You still hear some commercials on some of the talk and sports channels on both Sirius and XM. When XM started, they had a sort of minimal amount of commercials on their music channels as well. Sirius went commercial-free from the start, and it quickly became evident that XM had to follow their lead. And one thing I wanted to add to what Rick said, he mentioned Latino stations. The thing about the programming on satellite radio is they have effectively unlimited bandwidth. What that means is, when you put on a Latino channel on XM, you're not replacing your country channel or your top 40 channel. You're simply adding more choice. Just for example, no one right now that I know of is broadcasting country in New York City, and there's plenty of country music fans in New York, but no one's been willing to give up the space that they devote to top 40 or whatever to put on a country music station and make it profitable. Mm-hmm. XM or Sirius can simply add a new channel and start broadcasting country, and there it is.
Let's see if we can squeeze in a quick call from Kirsten in Dustin, Florida.
Hi, are you there?
Yes, you're on the air.
Hi, Neil. I just wanted to make a comment. I am a Sirius subscriber, and I have friends that also subscribe to XM satellite radio. And in regards to commercial-free radio, they don't advertise from, say, third parties, but I did notice on several of my more popular music stations that the DJs interrupt music a lot in talk, and they also advertise for themselves, like Sirius, quite a bit, and was very disappointed at the beginning until I actually found a couple stations that don't advertise for Sirius on and off. But I was disappointed because it does say in their advertisements they are completely commercial-free listening, but that's not necessarily true.
Okay, Kirsten, thanks very much. We appreciate that. We'll take more of your calls when we come back from a break. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today about satellite radio, how it works, and how it's changing the radio industry. We're speaking with Richard Martin, a contributing editor of Wired magazine. He's following the world of satellite radio, and he's with us by phone from Kailua in Kona, Hawaii. You're invited to join us, of course, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And there's a couple of email questions. Chris from Mount View, California asks, is there any talk of eventually selling players for both services? I guess the predicate to that is that XM and Sirius are not compatible with each other. If you buy one box, you can't get the other one. Richard?
Well, yes, there is talk of one day having the two services converge, and certainly Sirius and XM are not in a hurry to have that happen. They are both still trying to establish themselves as money-making businesses. But I think, you know, convergence obviously is a buzzword these days, and I think you will see some form of convergence in your car radio where you can choose one or the other. You can subscribe to both on the same receiver. You can switch back and forth and so on. Mm-hmm. That's, I would say that's 5 years away at least.
Well, some people speculate that only one of these companies is going to survive. They both had enormous startup costs to launch those satellites into space to relay the signals. They've both lost a lot of money thus far.
They have. The cost of entry proved to be much higher than anticipated. XM spent something like $2 billion to get its satellites up and its service running. And I think, you know, with the signing of Howard Stern, it changes the playing field, certainly. Howard has something like 21 million listeners, and combined Sirius and XM have something like 4 million subscribers. So it's a big boost to Sirius. I think XM is well on its way to breaking even, so it'll be an interesting battle over the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Let's get another caller on the line. Wendy's with us from Sacramento, California.
Hello, Neil. Listen to your show faithfully.
Thank you.
And also, I am a devoted Howard Stern fan listener, and I've been speaking to a lot of friends, and everyone who I talk to keeps saying they will go to satellite radio, and I just think that the move that Howard just made, I mean, he's definitely going to revolutionize radio.
Is that the way it's going to work out, do you think, Richard?
Well, the revolution was already underway. I mean, if you talk to Hugh Panero, who's the CEO of XM, before Sirius signed Stern, Panero would say, look, we're going to keep on doing what we do. We're revolutionizing the radio business, et cetera, et cetera. And Howard Stern coming over, I think, is certainly a watershed for the business. That's why we're here talking about it right now. But I think it's simply going to accelerate a process that was already underway.
Well, yes, 21 million listeners, and I'm pretty sure a big chunk will go. I will definitely go. So that was my comment.
Thanks, call, Wendy.
No problem.
It'll be interesting to see what percentage of those 21 million actually cough up the $10 a month to listen to Howard Stern.
Here's an email question from Steve in Wichita. My question is, how does the signal strength compare to normal FM broadcast? Can you receive it indoors, such as in an office, without a direct view of the satellite through a window?
Well, I can answer that both for the vehicle and for my, I have it in my office. I actually am based in Boulder, Colorado. I live up in the canyons above Boulder, and when I get home, I often lose the FM signal, but XM radio comes in loud and clear. And XM has two geosynchronous satellites that are always in orbit above the Earth. Geosynchronous means they essentially stay in the same spot above the United States. They've got total coverage of the continental U.S., and there's a couple of spots when I'm driving through the mountains that I will lose the signal, but that's rare, and it's for a couple of seconds at most. So I can vouch that the coverage is quite good for XM, at least.
One issue that stokes some controversy within the radio industry is XM and Sirius's use of local content, such as weather, traffic, and the like. Some argue that's a breach of their license agreement with the FCC. Gene Green, a Democratic congressman from Texas, is on the House Energy and Commerce Committee. He's the co-sponsor of a bill with a Republican colleague to ask the FCC to look into that situation. Congressman Green joins us now from his office in Houston, Texas. Thanks very much for being with us.
Good afternoon. Glad to be there.
What is exactly the concern? What would your bill do?
Well, the concern I have, in having been on the committee for a number of years and watched this issue between cable and over-the-air free TV, and now we have it between satellite radio and local free radio. The original agreement back in December of 2003 between XM Satellite Radio and National Association of Broadcasters was a joint agreement filed with the FCC agreeing that satellite radio repeaters are restricted to simultaneous transmission and would not do local programming. But now, just in January of this year, XM Satellite Radio announced it will offer local programming by designating some of its national channels, localized traffic and weather, which is not a problem. It's just that, and in February, Cyrus announced the same thing. What we're seeing is that they will start taking away from our local radio stations, and Congressman Pickering and I have a concern about that. You know, if I want to subscribe to satellite, just like I may want to subscribe to cable, I still want free over-the-air radio that's, you know, marketable and economical where we can have our local radio stations. For example, in Houston, we've worked in Congress for years and around the country, we have Amber Alerts that are basically local public affairs coverage, localized emergencies that, you know, an over-the-air satellite or satellite radio would not be able to pick up.
Well, they could if they were broadcasting local content.
Well, and again, we've had that battle on with the TV and the cable issue and reached a kind of a compromise because at one time cable was going to send, for example, Denver weather to Houston, which doesn't do us a whole lot of good because that was the national network that they were picking up and saying, well, we do have ABC, NBC, CBS, or wherever, but it was actually a local station somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the same concern about radio. I like our local radio over there broadcast, and I would be concerned if we would lose that free business for my constituents because a lot of people would subscribe to satellite and we would lose the over-the-air.
Yeah.
And there's some national, you know, public interest concerns like Amber Alerts, public affairs coverages, localized emergencies that, you know, the radio – over-the-air radio is also the emergency network that we use for national disasters, and again, recently because of the Amber Alerts, so people will know that someone in my district has abducted a child. My local radio stations, both in Spanish and English, will notify their listeners.
Well, a lot of your local radio stations, your district is in Houston, a lot of your local radio stations, they're not local. A lot of them are owned by Clear Channel Media, and the broadcasts originate from somebody else. They're just transmitted in your area.
Well, but they still have a responsibility, and we've had battles on that, that I want to make sure that they still are available. If they're transmitted in our area, they still need to be available for localized information. Now, they may have a personality who may be out of, you know, somewhere else, but and their news may come out of somewhere else, but the larger companies who are doing that need to make sure they have local content and are available for example, the national, the emergency network.
Mm-hmm.
One station in Houston is the designation for the emergency network, and that station's responsibility is to tell the other 60 radio stations we have in Houston, Spanish, English, you name it, what that local emergency is. And I don't think satellite radio can substitute for that.
How do you react to the criticism that you're just trying to protect the entrenched terrestrial broadcast industry from competition from satellite?
Well, I don't think the competition's a problem because that's there now. If I want to buy, you know, a vehicle that's made with satellite or even have it refitted, I can do that. I just don't want there's a public interest in having over-the-air free radio that's competitive or at least marketable, so it'll be available when we do need it for these emergencies. And what the bill does, first the bill would codify the terrestrial repeater agreement that was made in December of last year between satellite and broadcasters, ensuring that satellite does not use those terrestrial repeaters for local content. Second, it clarifies that satellite radios would not use future technology and insert local programming in the different markets. Third, the bill, again, leaves it up to the FCC to consider effects on local broadcasting that may occur from the current offering by satellite radio licenses of locally based content on national channels. So, again, I think the playing field probably should be leveled. If the satellite wants to compete in the local area, then they ought to also do the public in the requirements that the over-the-air have to do.
Congressman Green, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Gene Green, a Democrat. He represents the 29th District of Texas, and he joined us by phone from his office in Houston, Texas. Well, in order to regulate the content of satellite radio, Congress would have to grant the FCC authority to do so. John Kriegler is a communications attorney for the firm Garvey, Schubert, and Bearer. He follows the FCC, how the FCC regulates the media, and he's with us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Sure.
What would Congress have to do to permit the FCC to regulate satellite radio?
Well, I think they would have to amend the statute that now gives the FCC that authority. It gives the FCC authority to regulate anything that occurs that's obscene, indecent, or profane that is done at the radio communication. And it's possible that that could be, that term, radio communication, could be expanded by the commission. But the commission is also hemmed in by judicial decisions that limit, so far, its authority to regulate to the broadcast medium.
Mm-hmm. Well, John Kriegler, as I understand it, the analogy everybody's making is with cable television. But if I'm right, the FCC did try to get its hands to regulate cable television.
It has in the past. It's always been a difficult argument to take the authority they have and to extend it just through the regulatory process. Usually it has to go back to Congress, as it has with cable, mm-hmm. to get that additional authority.
Right now, is it promising to get control of cable television?
There's been interest on the Hill in giving the FCC that authority. The FCC can't itself lobby, so it can't quite ask for it. I think its position would be that it is there to please Congress, and it would do what Congress told it.
Well, as we all know, the FCC has been upping the ante, the famous fines against Howard Stern, then, of course, Janet Jackson's wardrobe malfunction last year during the Super Bowl, or I guess earlier this year during the Super Bowl. Do you think the FCC really has an interest in getting, you know, taking on more in terms of cable television and now satellite radio?
It hasn't expressed any interest in extending its authority beyond broadcasting. What it has expressed a great deal of interest in is driving indecency in pretty expanded form off of the broadcast medium. The fines are going up every day. In addition to the ones you mentioned, the FCC issued its single largest fine for a Fox program yesterday.
That's for TV.
But when it went to court to defend its indecency powers, it argued to the court that these powers were limited to the broadcast medium. And in fact, it was chided by the minority view on the court by saying, if you want to regulate indecency, you're going after the wrong medium. It's all over there.
All right. So how does this, how do you think this is going to play out?
The Congress, before recessing, failed to pass a bill that everyone expected it to pass, which would have given the FCC authority to increase the fines enormously. It remains to be seen whether, when Congress comes back for a lame duck session, that will still go through. At some point, I think it's pretty sure bet that Congress will increase the FCC's authority to fine broadcasters from a maximum now of $27,500 per violation up to something in the neighborhood of $500,000 per violation. Mm-hmm. That seems pretty certain. I think it will be a while before Congress tries to extend the authority of the FCC to other media. There are some serious First Amendment constitutional arguments there to be overcome. Those media are distinguishable. They are subscription. People want them to come into their homes. And that's where the First Amendment usually strikes through the government's assertion of authority, when it prevents people from getting something they affirmatively want to have in their own homes.
John Kriegler, thanks very much. John Kriegler, communications attorney for the firm Garvey, Schubert, and Bearer, and he was with us here in Studio 3A. We're listening, we're talking about the subject of satellite radio. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And, of course, Richard Martin of Wired Magazine is still with us. Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Garrett. Garrett's calling from Jacksonville, Florida.
Great topic, Neil, and I appreciate you covering it. I believe the subject that localization on satellite radio is a very important issue, because terrestrial broadcasters are going to be increasingly under heavy competition from that. And the original agreement is that satellite radio wouldn't be doing that. If they're allowed to, I think that puts terrestrial broadcasters in a very, very bad situation.
And do you have an interest in this, Garrett?
I am a broadcast engineer terrestrially, and I follow this subject. I, of course, like the diversity of programming on the satellite radio. I can drive 600 and 700 miles down the road without changing the channel. But, you know, I think it's clear that the original agreement was such that terrestrial broadcasting and its interest and its service to the community would be protected. So that's a very key issue. And the fact that local stations are going to need to be very connected to their communities to survive this, I believe, in the future.
Richard Martin, what did you think of that?
Well, one thing I wanted to go back really quick and just in the interest of full disclosure, point out something your listeners may not know, which is that Congressman Green represents the 29th District in Texas. His offices are in Houston. Clear Channel, which is by far the largest terrestrial broadcaster, is based in San Antonio. So let's just be clear on where he's coming from. And I don't know. I have to say I'm pretty much of a free marketeer when it comes to this. If we're going to restrict XM or Sirius from broadcasting local weather, let's say, are we going to keep the Weather Channel on cable TV from telling me what the weather is in Denver or Houston or Phoenix? And when it comes to things like the Amber Alert and the emergency broadcast system, the power of satellite radio just extends the reach of those that kind of information. And it's really the terrestrial broadcast industry is really trying to ignore this problem and hope it will go away, but it's not going to go away.
Garrett?
Well, I respect that opinion, but, that should have been all, discussed and done up front in the original agreement. I mean, it's now we're coming back around, and it's some of the rules are starting to look like they're going to be changing. So, again, I just think terrestrial broadcasters are in for a long haul on this, and it's going to be, very tough to maintain competitive in your market if localization comes beaming down from the satellite coast to coast.
Mm-hmm. Garrett, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you now.
Bye-bye. And, we're not enough time left in the segment for another question, so we're going to put this on hold, come back after a short break and take more of your calls on the issue of satellite radio. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Ken Rudin will also be with us, NPR's political editor, to preview tonight's third and final presidential debate, which is scheduled for Tempe, Arizona, later today. So stay tuned for that. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's get another caller on the line. Sam joins us from Hingham, Massachusetts.
Good afternoon. I was the first program director of the radio station here in Boston on which Howard Stern now appears. That's when we changed it from Montavani to Frank Zappa and the Cream back in 1968.
Oh, and people probably didn't notice.
Not the least bit, I'm sure, right? Well, that time of night, and depending on what they were up to, they might not have. I got to say, as a former and endeavoring to become once again a radio professional and also an avid listener and subscriber to XM, and my son subscribes to Sirius, I could hope, and the American public could hope, for nothing more than that the impact of satellite radio drives the terrestrial broadcasters back to some reasonable level of creativity, inventiveness, and adventure. The idea that the FCC can put the energy it puts into worrying about Janet Jackson's breast or Howard Stern saying provocative things, while they deregulate the industry and let the competition and the content just become absolutely bland, it serves the current situation does not serve the listeners, for sure, does not serve radio professionals because there's so many fewer jobs, doesn't even serve the advertisers because, whatever they say, there is a form of price fixing going on, only serves the stockholders. It is just outrageous. Now, my only problem with satellite radio. When I park in my driveway under a thick tree, it doesn't come in so well. But they are, they have repeaters in major cities, so the terrestrial, you know, the land signal should get better in situations like that. But I just hope satellite radio prevails. I know it will. The two can coexist, and I hope that terrestrial radio gets a life again.
Sam, thanks very much for your comments. Appreciate
Thank you.
Richard Martin, could the competition have that effect?
I think you're already starting to see it, Neil. There's a station in Denver called The Mountain, and I spoke with their program director, who's a longtime terrestrial broadcast veteran. And when you listen to their music, it's basically, it's kind of a 60s and 70s and 80s rock station with a difference. And they're really trying to promote local bands. Their tagline is something like radio the way it used to be, and they're trying to become more creative in their programming and have a playlist that is not strictly limited by some guy in San Antonio or New York determining what program directors can play. The other thing to point out is that the major terrestrial broadcasters are hedging their bets. Clear Channel owns something like 8% of XM radio, so they are not stupid enough to ignore the future.
Email question from Eric in Oakland, California. I'd like to know if XM or Sirius are developing a TiVo-like device that will enable satellite radio listeners to record broadcasts and search for programs of interest.
The answer is yes. They are developing those features. There's a few of them already. Pretty soon you'll be able to program your receiver so that, let's say, every time a Clash song comes on, no matter what channel it's on XM or Sirius, you'll be immediately notified and be able to listen to it. Recording and saving music or broadcasts from satellite radio is a bit further down the line, I think, but certainly those features are technologically well within their grasp, and they're on their way.
And finally, from Don in Berkeley, California, we had a caller earlier saying he liked satellite radio because of the Spanish language broadcasting. Can one access radio in languages other than Spanish? Presumably English, but beyond that?
Not that I know of. Not yet. I mean, obviously, the Hispanic population is a huge and growing market in the U.S., and I think the beauty of satellite radio is that they will respond to market forces. They are not trying to, as one caller put it earlier, they're not interested in squeezing every dollar out of every minute of programming for the shareholders. They really are trying to be creative, and as the demand arises, they will respond to it.
Richard Martin, thanks very much.
Thank you, Neil.
Richard Martin, a contributing editor for Wired magazine, for whom he's been tracking the satellite radio business, and he joined us by phone from Kailua, Kona, Hawaii.